Culture and Rural Development Committee to order for Wednesday, February 6th. Thank you, members, for showing up promptly. We do have quite a lengthy agenda. We're going to try to go through quite a few confirmations, and if we have time, we'll hear a Senator Tomasoni bill at the end of the hearing. So with that, I'd like to call forward the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gary Wordish at before the committee. Thanks for having us here. I'm from Renville County. I've been a farmer from Renville County. I've been farming all my life, and grew up on a pretty diversified farm, which back at, you know, when I grew up, it was pretty much dairy, hogs, cattle, chicken, a little bit of everything. And farmed all my life, like I said. In 2000, when our current governor got elected to the United States Senate, I had the opportunity to work for him as his agricultural director, so I did that. And at that time, I rented my farm to my son. And so now I work for my son and do other stuff. Currently, I'm vice president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I guess, one of the reasons I enjoy serving on this Rural Finance Authority board, and one of the reasons every time I'm at home and my grandson comes over and wants to help do a chores, that's the reason why I like serving on this board, because that's the future, and that's part of the Rural Finance Authority, the Beginning Farmers Program, and that's it's important to have that out there. I guess that's probably good enough.
Thank you, Mr. Wordish. Mr. Kinsley, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Nisley. I serve as the CEO for United FCS. We're a farmer-owned financial services cooperative headquartered out of Wilmer, Minnesota. We serve about 5,500 shareholders in Minnesota and Wisconsin and have about $1.6 billion in assets outstanding in both states. I've been involved in agricultural lending since 1981 in various capacities. Across the upper Midwest, my family and I moved to Minnesota in 1995, and we have resided in west central Minnesota, the New London area, ever since. I was first appointed to RFA by Governor Tim Pawlenty in May of 2009, and then reappointed by Governor Dayton in May of 2011. And so I would appreciate your support as you're doing these confirmations today. For me, serving on the RFA, similar to what the comments that Gary made, it's really for me about young and beginning farmers and really doing all that we can do to support their entry into agriculture and the key role that agriculture plays in the economy of this state. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nisley. And members, too, I should have mentioned in your packets, we have individual letters from the governor on each of these confirmations as well as our applications, so you can follow along in that regard as well. Thanks for all the hard work that you guys do. That Minnesota Rural Finance Authority is a very important function of what we do here at the state level. Are there any questions of the two witnesses from the members of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
I move the confirmation of Mr. Gary Wordish and Mr. Mark Nisley to the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority.
Okay. On that motion, recommendation to confirm? Okay.
Mr. Chair. I move to the recommendation to confirm Mr. Gary Wordish and Mr. Mark Nisley to the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority.
Okay. Any further discussion? On Senator Dames' motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the list, we have the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals judges. I guess we'll have both of the judges come forward. Maybe tell us a little bit about yourselves, and then we'll proceed from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Patricia Millen, and I'd like to give you a little bit background about myself, and then I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. I am a graduate from the College of St. Benedict, where I attended there until 1981. I then went to William Mitchell College of Law, where I graduated in 1985. I started out my law career in a small law firm doing public defender work. And in 1987, I went to work for Larson, Heck, Klimek & Powell, which is a captive council for Employers Insurance of Wausau, representing Minnesota employers and insurers in workers' compensation claims. For 5 years, I was a litigator, working from cases from the settlement level up to the Minnesota Supreme Court. In 1993, I left to serve the state of Minnesota as a settlement judge at the Department of Labor and Industry. And in 1994, I served the state as the chief judge in the settlement division. Our courts were merged with the Office of Administrative Hearings. And in 1998 until 2011, I served the state of Minnesota at the Office of Administrative Hearings as a workers' compensation judge, settling cases, hearing mediations, and doing hearings. I also sat with three panel judges on cases under the Fair Campaign Practice and Campaign Finance Act. In 2001, I took a leave of absence to serve as the deputy commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry, and then returned to OAH until my appointment by Governor Dayton in 2011. In May of 2011, Governor Dayton bestowed upon me a great honor and privilege to again serve the state of Minnesota as the chief judge of the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals.
Thank you very much, Judge. Judge Hall, would you like to say a few words as well?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Gary Hall. I'm a judge at the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. I graduated from the University of Minnesota and the University of Minnesota Law School in 1982. I had a short stint as a solo practitioner, and I started with the Department of Labor and Industry in 1984. Since then, I've either worked in work comp in one form or another at the Department of Labor and Industry, in the Office of Administrative Hearings, and now the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. I've worked in many different roles as a workers' compensation specialist, as a workers' compensation attorney, settlement judge, hearing judge, and two stints as assistant commissioner at the department. I was just appointed in March of last year by the governor, and I'm prepared to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members? Judge Hall, I have a question. I heard that you can make a pretty mean bowl of chili.
You know, you can't, Mr. Chairman, you can't shed those stories. The last time I cooked competitively, my daughter was a toddler, and she's 17 now. She just got her driver's license yesterday.
And I wanted
to clarify one thing on my resume as well. It says that I have some training in international law in Paris one summer. Please don't ask me what I learned that year, because other than where to find the best baguettes and wine. But.
Thank you both. Actually, we did hear your presentation in Senator Tomasoni's budget committee, and we know that you have a very heavy workload and that you guys do a lot of good work for the state, too. So are there any further questions from members? If not, Senator Herr would move the confirmations of Patricia Millen and Gary Hall as judges on the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals to the Senate floor with recommendation to confirm. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to move to the Board of Electricity, and I think we have maybe a change in testifiers, but if Anthony Toff is here and would come to the table, that would be great. And I think it's our hope, members, and we can hear more from the Board of Electricity. These boards typically have more than one member, and so I think we'll go through and hear the qualifications, obviously, of each member. If members have specific questions, that's fine, but at the end of And then we would just take the motion for the slate of the members. But if you have questions on individual members, you can certainly do that. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Sparks, members of the committee. My name is Anthony Toft. I am the Vice Chairman of the Minnesota Board of Electricity. I was appointed Vice Chairman at the Board's annual meeting held July 10, 2012. This is my second term as Vice Chairman. I am a journeyman electrician member on the board. I have held my journeyman electrical Class A license for 30 years, and I've also held my master electrical Class A license for 28 years. I live in Rockdale, Minnesota. I've been involved in the electrical industry for more than 34 years, working and teaching. The State Board of Electricity was first established on July 8th of 1899 to provide for public safety in the rapidly expanding use of electricity. In 2005, a number of construction code-related programs were transferred to the Department of Labor and Industry. The Board of Electricity was included in the reorganization. Now, more than 100 years later, the Board of Electricity is under the statutory authority of the Minnesota Statutes, Section 326B, 32. The Board adopts the electrical code, including any amendments, adopts rules that regulate the licensure or registration of the electricians and electrical contractors, and issues final interpretations of the electrical code. The Board of Electricity has 11 members that are appointed by the governor. Each member is appointed for 3 years, with appointments limited to three consecutive terms. The current members represent a variety of stakeholders in the electrical industry, such as rural electrical suppliers, power limited technicians, journeyman electricians, master electricians, and electrical engineer, a representative of the state's electrical inspectors, and a member of the public. All board meeting minutes and agendas, the rulemaking activities, interpretations are posted on the DLI's website. With that brief overview, I would be happy to answer any questions anyone may have regarding the work of the Board of Electricity.
Thank you, Mr. Toft. Any questions from members? Senator Nelson, would you like to move the confirmation of the slate of Board of Electricity to the Senate floor with recommendations to confirm?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
So moved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, we have the Plumbing Board. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Parizek. I'm the current chairman of the State Plumbing Board. Just to give you a little background of the board, it was first established by the 85th legislature under Minnesota Statute 326B.435. Consists of 14 members, 12 of which are appointed by the governor. Myself, I am a licensed journeyman plumber and master plumber with the state of Minnesota. I also carry my medical gas installer certification and backflow rebuilder certification. This is my second appointment to the board. I was originally appointed by Governor Pawlenty and also reappointed by Governor Dayton this past year. We have a very diverse board. We have plumbing inspectors, plumbing engineers, water suppliers, water conditioning representatives, commercial plumbing contractors, and journeyman plumbers. And it's also a very active board. Since our initial meeting, we've had 30 meetings of the full board and over 85 committee meetings. Some of the authority that was granted the plumbing board under statutory authority is to adopt the plumbing code and amendments that must be followed within the state. We've reviewed and completed two revisions of the state plumbing code in 2009 and also recently in 2012, which became effective October 31st. We are also authorized to issue final interpretations and have done issued eight so far. We also have the authority to adopt rules for licensing, registration, and continuing education of plumbers. And some of those rules for continuing education just took effect this past November, so we will have our plumbers properly trained now. At this time, I would be happy to answer any questions that the committee has.
Thank you, Mr. Parzyk. Are there any questions from members? If not, Senator Coonan moves the confirmation of the slate of the Plumbing Board to the Senate floor with recommendations to confirm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you very much, sir.
Next on the list, we have the Board of High Pressure Piping Systems. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Sparks, members of the committee. My name is Larry Stevens, Jr., and I'm currently the chairman of the Minnesota Board of High Pressure Piping Systems. I was appointed chairman in July of 2008. I currently live in Woodbury, Minnesota, and have been involved in the high pressure piping industry for more than 19 years, working both as a pipe fitter and now as a project manager. The Board of High Pressure Piping Systems was created by the 2007 legislature under the statutory authority of Minnesota Statutes 326B.925. By way of background, high pressure piping systems are steam system piping designed to operate at more than 15 PSI. These systems are found in facilities ranging from small dry cleaners to hospitals to the largest power plants and petroleum refineries. High pressure and high temperature fluids designed to operate at more than 250 degrees and 30 PSI gauge are used for heating. An example of this piping system is Particle Board Plant in Minnesota. These plants often use thermal oil systems to heat their presses rather than steam because oil retains usable BTUs longer. It includes ammonia refrigeration system piping. These piping systems are found in nearly all cold storage and food processing plants, including Hormel Foods in Austin and Schwann's Food Service in Marshall. Hockey arenas throughout Minnesota also use ammonia refrigeration piping systems. And then finally, bioprocess piping systems. This type of piping system is used for medical research and pharmaceutical purposes. One such location would be the University of Minnesota. The High Pressure Piping Board adopts the High Pressure Piping Code that must be followed when these systems are constructed or modified. The board reviews requests and issues final code interpretations, adopts rules, with the exception of rule regulating continuing education, regulating the licensure or registration of high pressure piping contractors, journeymen, and other persons engaged in the design, installation, and alteration of high pressure piping systems, and advises the commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry regarding educational requirements for high pressure piping inspectors. The board consists of 13 members, including a DLI representative for Commissioner of Labor and Industry, and 12 members appointed by the governor. Each member is appointed for 3 years. The members are required by statute to represent a variety of stakeholders in the high-pressure piping industry, including a high-pressure piping inspector, a licensed mechanical engineer, a representative of the high-pressure piping industry, 4 contracting high-pressure pipe fitters, 2 from the metropolitan area and 2 from greater Minnesota, 2 journeyman high-pressure pipe fitters, 1 from the metropolitan area and 1 from greater Minnesota, a representative of industrial companies that use high-pressure piping in their industrial process, and a representative from a utility company in Minnesota, and finally a public member. All of our meeting minutes, agendas, and activities are posted on the DLI website. With that brief overview, I will be happy to answer any questions anyone has regarding the work of the high-pressure piping.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Do you know, just for my clarification, do you do work inside ethanol facilities?
Yes, Mr. Sparks, we do.
Okay. And then just as an industry as a whole, I know in the past there's been maybe the potential or a shortage of workers in this industry. Has that seemed to have gotten a little bit better lately?
Yeah, they're always looking for qualified people, absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions from the members of the committee? If not, Senator Bonhoff moves the confirmation of the slate of Board of High Pressure Piping to the Senate floor with recommendations to confirm. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Stevens. Next we have the Department of Labor and Industry Commissioner, Commissioner Ken Peterson. If you'd like to come to the table, we'd be happy to hear what you have to say this afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Ken Peterson. I've had the great honor of being appointed to be a commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry by Governor Dayton, who I think is a very, needless to say, I think is a very good leader doing a good job for our state. I've also had the honor of having the same position back in the last 2 years of Governor Rudy Perpich's term. So this is the second time I've appeared before a Senate committee asked for confirmation. And when I did do this before, one thing I did say was that the Department of Labor and Industry doesn't make many headlines, but what it does do is make a big difference in the lives of a lot of working Minnesotans. We continue to do that every day. I have the privilege to work with a great staff and a great group of people. I think we do a good job. Some of what we have since I became commissioner, we have tried to do a little bit of work, make things more efficient, make things more responsive to Minnesotans, along with Governor Dayton's request that we do a better job, and we're doing it. And some of the things we've done is we sped up our workers' compensation hearings process. We cut that about in half. That one of the things when the governor appointed me, he said he doesn't know much about workers' comp, but he does hear that it takes too long to have your cases heard. So we have sped that up. We worked with employers and represents employees, with insurance groups and others, and we came to the bill of the legislature and got that sped up. Another thing we've done is we covered almost $2 million for Minnesota employees in final and back wages that weren't paid. We're developing new state building codes in the areas of residential, commercial, energy, and accessibility codes. And we're focused OSHA efforts on high-risk injuries. We've got a real problem. With some injuries, we get more deaths, more injuries, and so we're trying to focus our efforts in those areas. I think I told you before when I appeared before this committee a week or two ago that for a couple of years, Minnesota was leading the nation in window washing deaths. Now, because of work that this body passed and some regulations and additional focusing individuals, we've cut that way back. We're not having as many injuries. We certainly haven't any deaths. One thing, and a final thing we're very proud of, is we've really increased our online licensing and permitting. We issue over 120,000 licenses a year, and we're putting them online. And now somewhere around 70% of our people, of our licensees, are responding online and getting their licenses. We also do electrical permits, somewhere around 200,000 electrical permits. Electrical permits are basically you just permission to go in and inspect a home, have your home inspected, a new home is being built, or a commercial facility. Those are all online. It used to take up to 6 weeks to get those done. Now you get them respond instantaneously. These and the other things we're trying to do at the department are rooted in common sense and just trying to do a better job for Minnesotans. I think my department works well, and I think we're doing a good job, and I'd certainly like to be confirmed as Commissioner of Labor and Industry. Thank you all very much. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll open it up. And I think it's important for people to know that I believe many of the commissioners have been around and met with the members, certainly of this committee and other members, too. So we appreciate you doing that. So thank you for all you do, Commissioner. I know it's an important department, and we want to make sure we have safe workplaces here in the state of Minnesota. Do members have any questions for the commissioner? If not, Senator Coonan moves the confirmation of Ken Peterson as Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry to the Senate floor with recommendation to confirm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Next, we'll hear from the Department of Employment and Economic Development Commissioner, Commissioner Katie Clark-Sieben. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present today, and I just want to thank each of you for being willing to meet one-on-one as well. And I'd also like to thank somebody who's in the audience today, my husband, Dave Sieben, who's been incredibly supportive of this new position, and we're very early in our marriage and very understanding of my demanding work schedule. And I'd like to thank Governor Dayton for his support and confidence. I'm truly honored by this opportunity to make a difference for Minnesotans and strengthen our communities. And like all of you on the committee, I share and value public service and am just truly honored to be able to serve the state in this role. I'd like to share just a little bit of information about my professional background. My career began working in professional positions at the Hartford and the Ordway Center for Performing Arts while I was still a full-time undergraduate student at the University of Minnesota, as I was self-financing my college degree. I started with working for Target Corporation even before I graduated from college, and worked there for 5 years in both human resources and marketing, working on national marketing campaigns such as their Black History Month campaign and Hispanic Heritage Month campaign. From there, after working for a large corporation and having a fantastic training from Target, I was interested in exploring startup world and moved to work for National Wind, a community wind developer. It was one of the best learning experiences I have, having limited resources as a small business, having to innovate on a daily basis, and truly see firsthand the challenges that some of our small business owners are having across the state. From there, I served as finance director for Governor Dayton's campaign for governor, and was responsible for accounting and compliance with the campaign finance board. And then Governor Dayton appointed me to executive director of the Minnesota Trade Office, where I served in that position for almost 2 years. While I was in that role, the state posted 8 straight quarters of record export growth. We had a record of $20.3 billion of goods and products exported in 2011, and we're on track to hit another record for 2012. We'll find out on Friday. I led 2 trade missions on behalf of the governor and the state, where we took about 30 Minnesotans to Korea and up to 50 Minnesotans to China. One of the companies on our Korea trade mission did sign a new agreement with an international distributor while on the trade mission. And I just heard from one of our agriculture producers that was with us in China last week that they're close to signing a new contract. So we have seen some great success from those trade missions. In addition, we partnered with the City of Minneapolis and applied for the MSP Export Initiative, which was a program from the Brookings Institute. They're taking a look at the National Export Initiative goal of doubling exports over 5 years, and interested in looking from a metropolitan perspective of what resources are needed in order to meet that goal. This was a very collaborative effort. We had a steering committee where we engaged Mayor Ryback, Mayor Coleman, the Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota High Tech Association, BioBusiness Alliance, and had all of those organizations, Greater MSP, at the table helping to define that strategy, and that work is still underway today, focused on how do we quickly connect companies to the right export resources that they need to expand their exports. Also, under my leadership with the Trade Office, we designed a new program called Export by Design, where we take small companies that are not currently exporting but just starting to begin thinking about doing so, and they have one-on-one coaching from either a coach from the Trade Office or the U.S. Commercial Service. And by the end of that program, have a strategic plan for how they're going to move forward with their company in increasing exports. In late October of 2012, Governor Dayton appointed me to Commissioner of Deed. It is, again, an immense honor to be selected for this significant public service role. As commissioner, my top priority is ensuring Minnesota's ability to compete in the global marketplace. And I believe I was uniquely positioned with that mission during my time in the Trade Office, seeing firsthand the markets that we're competing with in Shanghai and Seoul, in Saudi Arabia and Turkey. I'm dedicated and committed to strengthening Minnesota's competitiveness during my time in this role, and we'll put every ounce of energy I have into competing for business expansions and relocations and strengthening our workforce. And I believe and am focused on 3 key goals. First, increasing exports and foreign direct investment. Second, attracting business expansions and relocations. And third, focusing on our skilled workforce. And I'll just very quickly highlight a few new initiatives that are underway that are focused on these goals. As far as increasing exports, the MSP Export Initiative and the Export by Design Program. For foreign direct investment, the governor's budget includes $1.5 million for the Global Competitiveness Initiative that would allow us to open 3 new offices in key foreign markets. as well as funding for an Invest in Minnesota marketing campaign. For attracting business expansions and relocations, the governor's budget includes $30 million for the Minnesota Investment Fund and $25 million in the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and also a reduction in the unemployment insurance tax. And then two new studies that were just recently launched. We have commissioned a study with Deloitte through partnerships with foundations, support through foundations, to take a look at how we're supporting small business across the state and what if we're adequately supporting or if there are ways that we can be doing that better. And we've also, through a generous grant from McKnight Foundation, have a new study with the Carlson School at the University of Minnesota on our workforce programs and taking a look at two things, developing a dashboard of metrics that can be used to evaluate program performance and analyzing the information to develop a better understanding of the outcomes achieved by these programs. So we have a fantastic team at DEED. I'm very honored to be appointed into this role and would appreciate your support for confirmation and hope to work with you going forward.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Are there any questions from the members? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Really more of a comment, Commissioner Stephen Clark Stephen, because of my role as Chair of Higher Ed / Workforce Development, part of, while we don't have any funding for workforce development, we do have a strong commitment to it, and you'll see that we'll bring forward initiatives that will affect you, and I know we've spoken a little bit already of some of those with a potential partnership on the Workforce Development Center. So I would just say that I'm looking forward to working with you, and I've appreciated your openness and your enthusiasm with regard to those projects.
Thank you.
And, Commissioner, just to follow up on that, I'm glad that your husband was here today and willing to know that you're going to work hard, because I can promise you this committee is going to have you doing a lot of work in the economic development area, and obviously we're going to tag team with Senator Bonoff and her committee as well. Are there further questions for the Commissioner? Senator Hurt.
Mr. Chair, on January 23rd, I did casually declare that that would be the Katie Clark Stephen Day. So today I take the honor to move that we confirm. I move that you help me with the language.
We can help you, sure.
Yeah.
Senator Bonoff wanted to do it too, but that's okay. We'll let you do it.
Yeah.
Senator Hurd moves the confirmation of Catherine Clark Stephen as Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development to the Senate floor with recommendation to confirm. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Last but not least, we have the Irons Range Resource and Rehabilitation Commissioner, Commissioner Sertich. Welcome to the committee. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair and members of the Jobs Committee, my name is Tony Sertich. I'm the Commissioner of the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, known as the IRRRB, and I'm here before you asking for recommendation for confirmation. Members, before you is a one-page handout, a little bit on who I am, a little bit about the IRRRB, and a little bit about our vision. But I first want to start with acknowledgments, and I would be remiss if I first don't acknowledge my wife, who drove down earlier today, 3 hours. Tally is in the audience. Tally is the director of an Upward Bound College Readiness Program at Hibbing Community College, so I'm glad that she's here with me today. Two other people I have to mention are both my mother and father, especially my mother. Her birthday was yesterday, and they're watching online north on the Iron Range right now.
Happy birthday.
Yes. And then last but not least, my boss, Governor Dayton. I just want to publicly thank him for the opportunity to once again serve the people of the state of Minnesota and the Iron Range in this very important position to me and to our region. I'm a fourth-generation Iron Ranger. My family goes back to coming over on ships from Croatia, Italy, and Ireland, and doing mining basically their entire lives and for generations. I still have cousins and uncles that work in the mines up on the Iron Range. I live in Chisholm with Tally. And for this job, the job of the IRRRB is an interesting public-private partnership, and I bring with it some experience in both the public and private side. I served for over a decade with some of you around the table in the House of Representatives. And with my other hat, the private side, my family has owned a business up in Chisholm for the past 30-plus years, and I've been the business manager for about the last decade. And so I do the books for a small business up in Chisholm. A little bit about the IRRRB. We've been around for 72 years. We're probably one of the most misunderstood agencies in Minnesota, and it's for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, we're the only state agency that is headquartered in rural Minnesota. Our office is up in Eveleth, 3 hours north of here on a good day. And we're the only, quote-unquote, state agency that only serves a portion of the state of Minnesota. And so on your one-pager, if you flip over to our impact side of our sheet, you can see it's that Arrowhead region. It is parts of 7 counties. It is about 140 communities. And it is 15 school districts where mining has traditionally taken place. Down where Senator Rude knows on the Cahuna Range, where they don't mine anymore, but they may again someday soon, across the Mesabi Range and up the Vermilion Range. Our agency was established by Governor Harold Stassen back in the 1940s, who saw and knew of the boom and bust of a natural resource-based economy like the mining industry, and knew that we had our work to do to provide some programs, as he called it, to help with diversification and to smooth out that boom and bust cycle. And so the mission of our agency is to promote and invest in business, community, and workforce development for the betterment of northeastern Minnesota. Our agency does not receive general fund or statewide tax dollars. Our agency is fully funded by a production tax that the mining companies pay instead of paying local property taxes. This money is collected by the Department of Revenue in a regional way because there's about a half dozen mines up there that support the economy over this large geographic area. And the money is distributed much like a local property tax is back to counties and cities and school districts. And we receive roughly about a fifth of that funding to do our mission at the IRRRB. We're a small shop. We have approximately 56 employees. And a few of my accomplishments and results being commissioner of this agency, our jobs impact just over the past 2 years, and you can see it on that sheet right there, the impact we've had over our entire region when we've invested helping businesses grow, helping our communities with infrastructure, and helping with workforce development at our colleges and high schools. We have seen over 1,000 new jobs being created on the Iron Range in the past few years, over 2,000 construction jobs on those capital investment public works infrastructure projects. And the leverage of money, private investment or outside investment to ours, was 4-1, and we're very happy with that leverage. We reorganized our agency. We have such a small shop, as I said, 56 employees. We had 6 silos when I got there, and we've knocked down the silos, and we're down to 3. And I can promise you those 3 work very well with one another. We've improved access to information. At an agency such as ours in economic development, sometimes you only get headlines when you do something wrong, when you invest in a business that fails, and that tends to get big headlines. And so we've done a better job of letting the public know, and we've done good things as well. But we also wanted to be transparent, and we've relaunched and revamped our website in 2 ways. You can now find the funding of every project we've done for the past 10 years on our website, www.irrrb.org. And we're going to go back further. We have a pole barn with boxes of paper back 70-some years, and we're pulling them out. We're going to get that online for the public to see the investments we make and the jobs impact it has. Also, when we relaunched our website, we knew that people don't move to northeastern Minnesota because we have a bureaucracy called the IRRRB. They move up there because they like to recreate. They like their cabins maybe up in Ore, or they like going up fishing on Lake Vermilion, or they like snowmobiling like I do, which I'll be doing this weekend. And so our agency website now highlights the beauty of northeastern Minnesota, not the bureaucracy of the IRRRB. And then outreach is the last thing that I want to talk about. I think it's very important, and maybe it's my upbringing working in the legislature, is going out and meeting with people face-to-face, whether it be businesses or community leaders. We had 10 outreach meetings all across our region from Aiken up to Grand Marais, and I know Senator Rude sat through the one down in Aiken where I came to them. They don't have to come to us, and really hear what's on people's minds in their communities and what their needs are. And so we plan on continuing to do that outreach effort. As a matter of fact, next Tuesday we're going to have an open house at our offices, inviting in all the local elected officials, the new local elected officials especially, on the range to make sure they know what sort of programs that we have to offer for their communities. And so with that, Mr. Chair and members, I'm open to answer any questions and would appreciate your vote of confidence.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any questions for Commissioner Sertz? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Sertich, I'm sorry that you couldn't show that great presentation that you have on your iPad. I really appreciated seeing that today. I'm wondering if you could I really appreciate your focus on really economic development and jobs.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, do you have numbers about the IRRRB as far as the geographic area that is in the IRRRB? What are your employment numbers or unemployment numbers?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and members, I could try to look to my friends Indeed for a little help on this. They're the ones that measure this. But our unemployment numbers are relatively the same as in other parts of rural Minnesota. We have a big tourist economy up on the range, and so that will fluctuate significantly. I know there are some unemployment challenges down in Senator Rood's area and over in Aiken County in particular that are a little higher than the statewide average. And so that's always a key area that we look at. Within our state statute where the IRRRB is located, we have to pay special attention to those areas with both high unemployment and especially those areas that lost jobs due to mining impact when mines shut down. So they're a little higher, like in all of rural Minnesota, they're a little higher than the statewide average, but that fluctuates with the seasons.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, thanks for being here today, and thanks for your work up there. Mm-hmm. How is it going, and what is your relationship with potential future mining?
Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. That's a good question. We don't get involved as closely as some people think with some of the new mining opportunities. We certainly play a potential investment role and maybe a first point of contact for those businesses. I sit on a mining sub-cabinet that Governor Dayton created along with Commissioner Clark Sieben and the commissioners of PCA and DNR as kind of the regulatory commissioners and the promotional commissioners to interact with these larger businesses. And I know they're all working their way through some point of the permitting process. Now, we know the good work that the legislature did in conjunction with Governor Dayton in speeding up permitting and timelines. For these large projects, though, it's very complicated, laborious process of permitting. And it's not just in the state of Minnesota. They have to interact with the EPA, Land Services, Army Corps of Engineers, and others. And so we're always trying to do better in moving that forward. I can tell you they're all moving forward, a little slower than I would like to see, but we're making progress on all those projects. And that's just one important piece of our economy. You know, as the IRRRB, our goal is to diversify. And part of that is to look at strategic metals and other things that we're not doing in northeastern Minnesota. But my focus, more so than anything, is that on a smaller business level, and I know Senator Rood and others have heard me say this before, we're not looking for home runs at the IRRRB. And so often in economic development, people see it just as a financial incentive that you travel all over the world to try to entice people to come to your region. My first goal is to look at our existing businesses to see how they can grow. You know, our small businesses up in the Iron Range have roots in our communities. Their business owners go to our churches. Their kids go to our schools already, and we're trying to grow jobs 4, 5, 10 at a time. And so I'm not always looking for the home run business. We're looking to diversify, and that means helping out multiple businesses, especially those existing businesses. Now, that's not to say we're not out there swinging for the fences, too, but we're really trying to balance our efforts in that way.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions for Commissioner? Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. Senator Eakin moves the confirmation of Anthony Sertich as Commissioner of Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation to the Senate floor with recommendation to confirm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Tomasoni, Senate File 252. Welcome to the committee, and start whenever you and the commissioner are ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Senate File 252 is before you only because as a result of redistricting, the current law for the formation of the board of at the IRRRB is no longer possible to comply with, and so this is a bill that will change how the board is picked and the qualifications for the members that go on the board. Ultimately, what was happened before was the board was appointed by the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate, and then three non-elected people were appointed by the one by the Majority Leader, one by the Speaker, and one by the Governor. And the qualifications for the board had to be that there had you had to have at least 51% of your constituencies within the Taconite tax relief area. At least more than half of the board members had to qualify in that particular aspect. With redistricting, we're no longer able to meet that qualification because there aren't enough people to meet that qualification that in those districts. So what this says is that in order to be on the board, you have to have one-third of your constituents in within the Taconite tax relief area, and then you're automatically a member of the board, and it takes out the laborious process of the speaker, the majority leader, and the governor making appointments. And it also removes the unelected members because they basically don't have anybody in any of their districts because they aren't elected. And so it actually moves the board from a 13-board member to an 8-board member. And it's something that has to be done. How we do it is up for debate, I suppose, but this is a pretty good way to do it. And it will work basically into perpetuity, I think. But who knows what will happen in the next redistricting. I think that's what the bill does. There's a couple of spots where you'll see where it changes 7 voting members to a majority of the board. The 7 voting members was a majority of the board, and so just having a majority of the board now basically reflects what the language said before. And the repealer that you see in there is just repealing the previous statute that spoke to how to appoint the board. So I think that's an explanation of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. Commissioner, would you like to comment at all? Or
One thing, Mr. Chair and members, the reason this is before you so early in session is we need a board appointed to do our good work, and we generally have board meetings quarterly or every other month, and we don't have any projects before us that need immediate attention, but I'm assuming by March or April we're going to have some projects, and so I would appreciate a board selected so that we can do our work at the agency.
Thank you. Senator Dames?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, just so I'm clear in this, the reason that you're reducing the board members legislatively and consisting of legislators is because you don't have enough legislators now to meet these requirements? Is that what's happening?
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dames. What's in current law, we can't meet the what's in current law. It's because of the redistricting. So people were moved around, and the districts all got bigger, and actually some of them moved away. So we can't form a board under current law. So we basically have to change it.
Senator Dames,
Senator Tomasoni, I understand that, but why do you want to remove the 3 non-elected folks from the board? I mean, certainly 3 people within that location to serve in this board. Why do we want to take away the outside influence of 3 unelected members?
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, there's a couple of reasons. One is that we've never had them in the past, and they were more of a political thing that happened in the legislature than a desire of people in the area. And the second reason is because we have something called the TAC board, which is a all unelected member board that reviews all of the projects before it ever gets to the legislative board, and they are all citizens. And so there's a board that actually forwards recommendations to us before we even see them, and they're all citizens. And so we figure that we're top heavy on citizens already.
Senator Dames,
follow up. Can you repeat that? Did you say currently you don't have non-elected officials on this board? You said we've never had them in the past.
No, we have them now. But previous to when they were when the legislation was passed that put them on, there were never any. So I think from 1941 until 1999 or 2000, there were never any members of the unelected members. We've been operating over the last 12 years with them. The people that have been there have basically said they didn't know why they were there and didn't need to be there, but it was statutorily required for them to be there. But there's one other commission. What's it? Taconite Assistance. We call it the TAC Committee. Anyway, Technical Advisory Committee that is made up of all non-elected citizens that review all the projects and then make recommendations to the full board as to which ones they think should pass. So we feel that we have more than enough citizens that are participating in the process.
Senator Thomasoni, do you know why they were put on the board in 1999?
Yep.
Why was this done in 1999 and now it's not useful anymore?
Senator Thomasoni.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I know why, and I'd probably have to tell you off the mic, but they weren't put on because anybody on the Iron Range requested it. Okay, there were Democrats in charge of the Senate, the Republicans in charge of the House, and they were fighting, okay? And so it came out as a compromise. That's got me what it was.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Sertich, when we visited my office, I remember I talked to you about the importance of transparency and accountability, mm-hmm. and we discussed that. And I'm just curious how this particular bill actually would address or change accountability and transparency as far as taking off, making the board smaller. Mm-hmm. And also taking out the board currently, according to this proposal, would include the elected representatives of the IRRRB area. Is that correct,
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Senator, that is correct.
Senator Nelson.
So, is there any accountability or transparency beyond the IRRRB in and of itself and those particular representatives? I mean, are there any public members that would be involved in this? And then secondly, what state money is involved in the IRRRB?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I'll, if I forget one of the three
yes.
answers, make sure I hit them all. So
yes.
First and foremost, let's go with the state money. There are zero state tax dollars at the IRRRB. It's all local money. Number two, as far as accountability, the board actually keeps the commissioner accountable, and that's the oversight of this board. And so the way the process works is a commissioner comes forward with spending recommendations and projects, and then the board votes on that. And then that has to go to the governor's office for a signature. And so there are three steps and checks and balances. So you have the executive branch check, you have the legislative branch with this board, and then the governor signs off on the projects. And so that's the accountability measure. It's all followed up with we are always reviewed by the legislative auditor's office. Now, we haven't had an audit in a couple of years. I'm expecting them to knock on my door any day now, but we are audited as every other agency is by the legislative auditor. And so that's your accountability from start to end. Mm-hmm. There's also the non-elected officials serve on this technical advisory board. And so every project that I'm going to propose, a group of local citizens sits down and looks at the business plan of this business, and they make a recommendation to our full board. And so there's a check even of unelected people before it gets to our full board. And as far as transparency, every dollar we spend is public information. Our board meetings are public, and if folks want to watch them, they're online streaming, and they're all on our website backaways. And so it's full public board meetings that are heavily scrutinized if you live up in northeastern Minnesota. And there's that check and balance between the executive branch, the legislative branch, with that non-elected input on the front end.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Thomas,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, they actually play our board meetings on television on local on the cable access channel for like 4 months afterwards.
so maybe just one follow-up, Senator Thomasoni. So how do you think the folks are going to feel about shrinking the board and losing the non-legislative membership on that board?
Senator Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, I don't think there will be any negative feelings about it at all because I don't think anybody really we looked at it from the standpoint of the people who were the non-elected members of the board, and they basically said to us they didn't think there should be non-elected members on the board because we were dealing with money that was being voted on by elected people who could be held accountable, and they felt that was way more important than having the non-elected people on the board.
Thank you.
Commissioner?
Thank you. And a little more historic context to the size of the board. Our board has been anywhere as small as 7 members and as large as 13, and so this is still within historically the size that the board has been in years past.
Thank you.
Good questions. Are there any further questions for Senator Tomasoni? If not, Senator Herr, would you like to make a motion?
Yes.
Okay.
I move.
Senator Herr would move that Senate File 252 is recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
Aye.
The motion prevails.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman and committee members.
We have one quick announcement, folks. Thanks. We got a lot of work done in a good amount of time here. Brian, if you want to just make an announcement.
In your folders, you'll see there's a packet of information and an invitation to a tour at St. Jude's Medical's headquarters and technology center. It's in Little Canada. It's just a short drive from here. The tour is arranged for the house, and they invited our members and staff to come along. So if you're available, it is this Friday morning, but I'll send out an email with additional information, but you should have a packet in here.
No, Fridays are kind of tough. I think the house originally had planned, they just tried to include us, so if you could make it, that's great. Otherwise, thank you for good work today, committee, and with that, the meeting's adjourned.